Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360 degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's Klaviyo.com. You're listening to the Wavebreak podcast, the show where I interview the people behind the fastest growing e-commerce and direct-to-consumer brands. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO at Wavebreak. Wavebreak is the email and CRM agency for high-growth D2C brands. With ad costs rising, we help brands maximize lifetime value by building and optimizing world-class email and SMS marketing programs. You can learn more about partnering with us at wavebreak.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. I'm super excited for this one. Today, I'm joined by Steve Morales, VP of Marketing at NYDJ since 2019. So he's been there a decade now. the way time's been moving these last few years. But I'm really excited to chat today, Steve. Obviously we've been chatting a bit, before we press record here, but I'm excited to dive into the rest of your story and how you've really helped NYDJ evolve as a digital brand and build out and scale out your team and get your perspective. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. Let's dive in. So first things first, your background. I'll give everybody kind of like the brief summarized version, but you started in music. You were in that for a long time, all the way back to MySpace days, which I think we're all nostalgic for. That's even where I started learning my first HTML and CSS, making MySpace layouts, figuring out how to get things to center and, you know, getting that marquee to go across. Yeah. So, you know, missed those days. With the pop punk in the background. So that was the music industry that you were involved in. You know, slowly got into digital as you switched things up, ran your own agency for a while. And then after a series of events, found yourself as VP of marketing at NYDJ, which since then you've really taken you've really helped the company evolve from, you know, what it was purchased as into where it is today. And so that's what I would love to dive into today is like that transition, because, you know, even though you entered, you know, a brand with an existing team that maybe wasn't exactly ideal, there's a lot of brands that are, you know, in that position, or people who are entering or just in a brand that's growing really fast. And so they're trying to figure out, how do I structure my team? Or like, how do we think about technology and building this for scale? And I think that's what's going to be really fun to chat about today, is you've done both of those things, built out and scale out the team, built out and scale out your tech stack. You're using a really awesome tech stack. You know, nowadays it's really popular and for good reason. But you were also previously on a legacy tech stack, which like a lot of people on the modern tech stack weren't on that, but brands are going to have to make that transition to make it happen. So lots to dive into today. But first things first, like take me back to 2019. You started NYDJ. Where are things at? What's the team look like? What's the stack look like? What's the state of the brand? Like, walk me through that first kind of like you show up. What is it like?
Sure, definitely. So first of all, I would say just really impressed by the numbers that they were putting up. You know, NYDJ was founded like 16, 17 years ago now. It was originally founded as Not Your Daughter's Jeans. So out of the gate catered to a slightly older consumer. When the trend was going low rise with jeans, they went the opposite way, went high rise and provided denim technology that helped their consumer. Super strong business at Nordstrom, and then built out their own .com probably about 4 or 5 years ago now. But, you know, the way everything was built was really, you know, through the previous owners, what they felt were the best of the best, you know, which inherently ends up being, you know, what people sell you on is just the most expensive option. So that was something where I came on board and I was just like, oh, wow, you know, very impressed with the numbers that they're doing, you know, both through wholesale, their own .com, but even, you know, through their marketing channels. So super strong click-through rates, very loyal, women opening their emails on a daily basis. But I saw huge opportunities bringing, you know, what, you know, I had learned and kind of my philosophy on being scrappy, you know, leveraging technology, being on the cutting edge of, you know, vendors, partners, you know, and bring that all into one place. So, you know, first and foremost, you know, start at the top, right? Take a look. They're on Salesforce. It's slow, it's expensive. And then just start going down the vendor list from there. You know, look at, you know, 2-3 year contracts, look at, you know, tens of thousands of dollars in retainers. And to me, what I saw Salesforce as was like a planet, if you will. And it just had this gravitational pull of just expensive and slow vendors. One of the first things I inherited was an Afterpay project. And, you know, they weren't on Afterpay. I think they did like a 2-year exclusive deal, which I'm just like, who makes these decisions? You know, the dev implementation as a project was going to be like 25 or 30 grand. And it was going to take like 3 months to install Afterpay, which
if, like if 3 months listeners... in the Salesforce world is actually like fast. Like
yeah, completely.
3 years is a common timeline for a lot of things.
100%. So if any of your listeners are familiar with Afterpay or integrating with anything else other than Salesforce, specifically Shopify, it's like a 3-day project. you know, and one of those days is like switching back before between time zones, getting the contract signed. So I just couldn't believe it. And that was another one of the things where I was just like, man, this doesn't make sense. You know, we got to put a plan together for migrating to Shopify Plus. And then from there, it was just, you know, analyzing all the vendors. So looking at, you know, the right email partner, you know, looking at, and also just relying on Shopify as our primary, you know, point of contact and having everything stem from there. So relying on them to provide us the Shopify preferred vendors, but also like, you know, finding a few other ones, see if there's anybody new, you know, poking around that might not have made it to their preferred vendor list yet. And then just going down the list.
Yeah. What was that original like tech stack? Like, was it like Commerce Cloud and then
Commerce Cloud. Yep. Commerce Cloud, and Service Cloud and Marketing Cloud.
Got it. Yeah.
The full
good
suite.
FSMC. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great contract. So like,
yeah.
What is the process even like for getting out of that? They can't be excited about you leaving.
No. So, I mean, we kind of like chipped away at it. So it was like, you know, I think Marketing Cloud was up and I was like, hey, you know, this doesn't really make sense based off, you know, I just started like finding the holes and they were like, well, you know, we'll give you this, we'll give you Social Cloud for free. And I'm just like, there's a new cloud. Like how many more are you guys going to have, you know? Right. And I was like, ah, no, I'm not really into it. So, you know, then it was just chipping away. So it was just chipping away. So, you know,
where'd you go
Marketing
from there?
Cloud like, was up first.
So you canned SFMC. Oh, and then you went to Klaviyo.
Yep. So we went to Klaviyo. And
did
then,
they have a Commerce Cloud integration back then?
I think so.
Maybe just like
I think
privately.
So. Or we had to do, yeah, it was a little more of like a custom build, I think. So I think we probably had to put some like dev work, surprise, surprise, on our end into integrating with Salesforce.
Got it.
So, you know, but, you know, imported everything over.
And what was that process like going from SFMC to Klaviyo? Because, like, it's one thing to, like, switch ESPs, but also, like, SFMC is, like, a beast. Like, Marketing Cloud is a lot. And I'm curious on two things. Like, one, what was the process like in terms of just, like, was it difficult to make that transition on, like, an execution standpoint? And then I'm also curious the performance. Did you end up getting more performance out of Klaviyo after you switched?
Yeah, so the interesting thing about being on Marketing Cloud was that I don't think it was properly set up the right way. And also, I don't think that, you know, people really, we also weren't at that stage, you know, where we were taking full advantage of everything that they had to offer. So they tout, you know, their Einstein, you know, segmentation, personalization is a part of that and how important that is, you know, to your revenue success. I don't think it was even properly set up, or, you know, I don't think I've even talked to other marketers. Like, I think that's the running joke. They're like, does anybody really using it? Like, does anybody have it set up where it's really running? So that's interesting. Whereas I feel like, you know, with Klaviyo, it like filled the immediate need. We eventually did outgrow it to where we felt like we needed something a little more robust with that personalization that, you know, had some more of like a CDP layer on top of it or some sort of, you know, AI that could help us out with segmentation and personalization. So that's what we decided to do after leaving Klaviyo. But, you know, Klaviyo was just the steady horse that could, you know, get us, you know, moved over. You know, it's such a significant part of our business that, you know, we had to have something that was, you know, quick to implement, but also just consistent and steady.
Got it. And then where'd you go from Klaviyo afterwards?
So now we're actually on Retention Science, which is a smaller company here out of LA. You know, we were looking at both Amarsys and Retention Science. Amarsys is really good. I just felt like, you know, for us making the transition, we needed a little more like hands-on, hand-holding and a little more customization with how things were built. But I feel like the Retention Science team was a little more, you know, open to giving us rather than, oh, here's this really good platform. You know, it's up to you.
Right, for sure. Yeah. And then like, tell me about Commerce Cloud. So eventually your contract with them goes up, or did you make it to the end of the contract?
Yep.
Or
Made it to the end, you know, thanks to the pandemic. We were going to cut it short. We were looking at like, I would say like a June, July migration, that we were trying to start the process in January and February. But with everything going on, you know, we felt like we need to get, you know, out of the woods a little more, you know, as much as possible, because we were doing things on a day in, day out basis, trying to understand what our customer, you know, needed, wanted, and expected from us as a brand, and how that translated to what was going on. So we did both pretty much site-wide sales. We were like 25% off just across the board, trying to provide some relief to, you know, our customers that needed it. But also we partnered with our longtime partner, United Way. So we did a give get back campaign that was part of an umbrella of a Together We Thrive campaign, because we felt like that was important to our customer, that she felt like we were not only, you know, giving a discount because we wanted them to continue shopping, but, you know, we had some philanthropic efforts as well. So didn't want to throw a migration on top of all that when we really didn't know how long this was going to last. But we did have a drop dead date in November that we had to hit. So migration fully went through October 15th.
Got it. And then what was that process like? So you were sold on Shopify Plus already, I'm guessing, from your agency days and the e-commerce stuff that you did before. What was it like going from Commerce Cloud to Shopify? Was it scary at all, or was it mostly like, no, like I'm so set on Shopify that like I can't wait till I can breathe and like move quickly?
Completely. I mean, just as you look into everything that Shopify like does for you, and like the relief that it gives you, it's beyond a no-brainer. Like when I was going through the vendor list and I was like, hold on, why do we need somebody for that? Why do we need somebody for that? Why, like, address lookup, credit card processing, fraud, like, I mean, these are all important things. Shopify just does them really well, pretty much out of the box. Tax filing, like, you start going down this list, and you're just like redlining. You're like, okay, cool, out Shopify, 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 Shopify. You know, And not to say that those businesses aren't, you know, don't have their place. They aren't, you know, valid, but like Shopify does so much of that inherently. And then you look at the numbers after you move on Shopify. Some of them aren't transparent in regards to like what you can see, but like when we were looking at the Shopify Pay in 4 installments that they just rolled out, you know, I was able to get a lot of deeper analytics and reporting on Shop Pay and just what Shop Pay meant to our consumers. What percentage of them actually use Shop Pay? That's definitely not in the Shopify dashboard. When you log into your reporting, it's something you need to kind of squeeze them for. But you know, when they're trying to sell you on a new product and move away from Afterpay or Klarna, then you know they open up all the deeper insights that you can't fully get to. So, I mean, we saw like 49% of our customers are using Shop Pay. That's insane. You know, just from looking at like a Shopify versus a non-Shopify, like, okay, hold on, you're going to tell me that half of our customers are like using your native or your checkout process that lets them check out in 5 or 10 seconds. Right. And then, you know, even installing Amazon Pay, like I was on the phone with the guy from Amazon Pay getting it set up and he's like, okay, cool. This is, you know, okay, cool. You know, everything's on board. You guys are live now. And then this is where you'll get your reporting. And I was like, oh, that something just came in. Or I was like, oh, it shows an order. He's like, yeah, someone already checked out using. And I was like, while we're on the phone, that's crazy. You know, same thing.
Yeah,
like the
total
night,
opposite
the night
of that, Salesforce world, where they'd be like, yeah, like you said, like even Afterpay took 3 months just to go live.
Yeah. Same thing with Shopify Pay or with Shop Pay. The first order that came in through from Shopify, someone used Shop Pay.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, that's my go-to. I'm always like, please, please have the Shop Pay button. I'm looking for right now. Or an Apple Pay button, and then I'm done. Completely. But like, if I have to, even me, like, I'm tech savvy, so I'm going into 1Password. I'm not even getting my wallet out. I'm going to 1Password or LastPass to copy and paste. And it's like, even that, it's like too much. But eliminating that friction. And then how would you even do that on Commerce Cloud before? Like, you'd have to like add something external, like a Bolt or something. Like, I don't even know that space enough, because it's like, once you get a taste of the Shopify ecosystem, or like, and that's where I feel like a lot of people listening to this podcast, they're probably like, wait, what are they talking about? Like, if they, you know, started in this ecosystem and they've never experienced the, you know, commerce clouds or marketing clouds, like, it's actually incredible what we're able to do today in terms of speed, in terms of cost, in terms of everything in the Shopify ecosystem with, you know, tools and software like Shopify Plus and Klaviyo and like everything else that integrates into it on the back end. It's actually incredible compared to how things used to be. It really is.
And even like you can call Shopify, you know, well, we're on Shopify Plus, so you can call Shopify. Mm-hmm. And if you're having a problem, and like, they have people that are ready on the phone to be able to walk you through how to fix something yourself, which is great. Like you said, how would I do that? Okay, well, I'd have to talk to someone at Salesforce, find out if they have like a preferred vendor, that the third party that they can use. And then I would have to like send that to our dev agency, who would have to like prepare a quote and a timeline and all this, and like bring in 5 people on their time, you know, to end up milking us for, you know, 120 hours for something that, you know, on Shopify, it's like, oh yeah, you know, go to the App Store, search this person, you know, install that app, and then you're good to go. Oh, great.
Right. It's like magical. It's night and day. I know. We're so lucky. It's like having the difference between having electricity and not in the e-commerce world. But no, that's incredible. So, all right. So you got this tech stack built out. You finally get off Salesforce. You're on to Shopify. You're upgrading the technology across the board. Ultimately, like, what kind of savings did that drive for the business too? Like, because I'm sure you cut
a ton of costs. Last time I checked, we reduced the tech stack budget by like 65%. Wow. So it's pretty astronomical. Yeah.
That's amazing. Plus, you're getting all these added efficiencies out of it that end up increasing performance. It's really a win-win. That's incredible. And so that's the technology side. Walk me through the team, because that's the other piece. Like I said earlier, like a lot of people listening, they're part of a high growth brand, so they never had a team to begin with, or they're entering a brand that's already established, heading into a team, into a role similar to you as VP of marketing. Like, what was your initial team setup? And then like, where's the team set up today?
Yeah, so team has changed quite a bit. So right now, as it is, I oversee everything in marketing, e-com, and creative departments. We have them split up into three. You know, something that I'm fortunate because of the size of our business and where we're at, I'm able to have three strong directors. So one in each of those departments, you know, with another anywhere from 3 to 10 people below them in those departments. So, you know, the thing that I like is having a director of marketing and a director of e-commerce, where I feel like most companies, if you're in the like $10 million and under range per year, you're probably having one person do both, which I think is tough. Because I think it's tough to focus on like technology and e-commerce and how quickly things are changing, but also just like all the things you need to look at from a user experience, analytics perspective, and just, you know, trying to capture more conversions. I mean, if you think about just the numbers of it, you know, 94 to 96, 97% of people that go to your site on a daily basis don't purchase. Like, just thinking of that, that seems almost like insurmountable, but like, it's the world that we live in. Like, how do you get over 97% of people not wanting to buy, not wanting to do what you want them to do? Like, it's crazy, you know, but you know, we make it, but like 97, you're like, oh wow, cool. It's not 98, you know, it's not 99. Right.
And but, so how do you split that up? Is like e-commerce focused on like the site and optimizing the site, customer experience?
The site pretty much, yeah, the site pretty much as a product. So all the happenings on there, you know, launching products, launching promos, and then marketing is more the, you know, emails, all the managing all like the MarTech space. So, you know, your like the e-com will handle getting, you know, Yotpo set up and Klaviyo connected. Attentive connected, but you know, understanding the whole customer journey is done through the marketing lens, all the different touch points, you know, where you need to bring each thing in.
Got it. And then do they both report to you as VP of marketing? Got it. Because that's one thing I see too, and people always ask me about it. They're like, should marketing report to e-commerce or e-commerce report to marketing? Like, it's a mess. Sometimes they're totally different departments and they don't even really communicate together. Like, it's a mess. Like, what have you found? So what's interesting is your official title is, I guess, VP of marketing. So technically e-commerce reports to marketing.
Yep.
Yeah, and have so you found that that's the best way to do it?
I would say so. Because, you know, to me, it's like e-commerce is like a function of what marketing has going on. That's why it's like, I didn't really understand, you know, what our CEO had in mind when, or like, you know, I didn't question it, but I was just like, okay, this is interesting. Like, having me oversee these three just was more like happenstance and how, you know, he needed my skill set. But then sitting back sometimes, I'm just like, oh, okay, like I get it now. Because there's some things on like creative that I see, you know, when I'm there at a photo shoot, when we're coming up with a cool, you know, new content series or thing to do, that like the common thread, you know, not Sun Boisterous, but like the common thread is me and like how I like see it all playing out. It's like, okay, cool, let's do this. But like it has its place in marketing and PR and we're going to roll it out this way. And then it's going to have this landing page here, but here we can do this or, you know, build the landing page this way or, you know, build the collection page this way. And, you know, maybe we loop in like a vendor and a partner and like we're talking about doing something with Wink right now and understanding how to put like all those together, I think should really sit in marketing.
No, and that's so true. And like you said, like, you know, you're able to see through everything and like see it differently. You know, it's kind of like, you know, you talk about like going to war or something, like you're the general looking and like telling the team where to go. And their job is to just like, you know, not die. Right. Like when that's all they're worried about, it's like, that's all they can focus on. And I think that's really important. Cool. I think there's too many people who are at director or even VP level who are doing way too much of the execution. Part of it, 'cause like, you know, they came from the execution, so they feel a little guilty letting go. But what you can see when you're not in it is actually really incredible. You can see those little things exactly like you're talking about. And I like how you, how the vision of like having marketing, e-commerce, and creative all report up into marketing, because at this point, like if you're not a marketing organization, you're screwed. Like,
completely.
Like you can't just make creative that looks good for product photos anymore. Like you've got to be able to repurpose that in so many different places. Like when it comes to data and analytics, like who oversees that? Is that e-commerce team and then they send their reporting to marketing, or like how do you how does that
Again, very fortunate to be in the structure that we have here. We have an amazing planning department.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, our EVP of planning is really like the brains that makes everything run, other than our CEO, who is, you know, very much a data focused person as well, that builds everything out in Google Sheets, has, you know, data flowing to all his dashboards, and he just sees everything, you know, before everyone else does. Like, he's like, you know, my feeds come in at 6 a.m. and, you know, I'm ahead of everybody else. And so I know everything before all you guys are, you know, stepping into the office, which is great for me to continue to learn from, and just to see that, like, you know, that the devil is in the data, you know, and just making mm-hmm. sure you're reporting set up correctly, but also understanding like where certain things have their limitations. Like, we very much rely on Google Analytics, but if you look at Google Analytics versus Shopify, like, they short me like 10% each month on, you know, orders and revenue, because there's certain things that just don't fully pass through. Like, it's never going to fully sync up, but Shopify is limited when it comes to a lot of your, you know, marketing channels, your channel attribution sources, things like that. Like, the Shopify dashboards just aren't there. They're right. aware of it. You know, most marketers are aware of it. So that's why GA is just, you know, a great thing to have. It has to be set up correctly by the right people.
Right.
You know, if you haven't dabbled in it, I would not suggest, you know, if you really need to like live and die by the performance of this business, being like, oh yeah, you know, I'm just going to like, you know, watch a few videos and, you know, should be figured. No, definitely find someone who's, you know, expert level. Have them clean up your GA, get all your tags right, get all your channels right, and then pull that data and reporting into a Google Sheet for you to see and get updated and refreshed every day.
Right. I mean, last thing you want to do is make decisions based off data. That's incorrect.
Yeah, like, completely.
That is deadly. No, and that's awesome. And that's great. I like the setup too, like EVP of planning. I think a lot of brands could benefit from having somebody in that role. I think so many are flying by the seat of their pants too much. What does an EVP of planning do? And like, how does it help you on the marketing side?
Yeah. So, I mean, her team decides all our promos. They decide our promo calendar. They look at, you know, normally LY, but now, you know, 2019 in regards to comping, you know, the majority of NYDJ's business is still wholesale. So there are certain things that we need to be sensitive to, take into consideration when our wholesale partners have their anniversaries, have their sales, whatever. So we need to take that in consideration. And then I have a daily forecast by channel for what, you know, we should be expecting. And then that plays into the type of emails we're sending out, the products we're featuring. And I mean, they're just, like I said, they're the brains that make everything run.
Yeah. And then how far out are you planning? Is it like planning monthly? Are you planning a quarter out? Are you planning a year out? What does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, so they have a lot of the anniversaries out, you know, through the end of the year, probably all through next year somewhere. And then, you know, I would say they're planning, you know, a few days out, like they have it locked in a few days out before the month. But that's when we usually have our like following week. So like, I think tomorrow, the day after, we have our August forecast meeting where we lock the forecast for August. But that's already kind of set. They've already been working through everything. There's just a few tweaks like here and there. There's maybe like, you know, if we're seeing like July was running a little soft, you know, going into August, like, are there certain things, are there bigger trends that we need to be looking at? Do we need to drop in a flash sale? Do we need to drop in something else? Do we need to change a promo from, you know, 20% off sale on sale to 30% off so we can bump up to, you know, up to 70% off messaging? Things like that are usually decided in the last few days before the month.
And then like back to your team, quickly as we kind of start to wind down, like director of marketing, director of e-commerce, and then director of creative. Like, who's managing one and what departments, and are you creating like your ad creative in-house as well? Do you outsource some of that to an agency? Do you edit?
No, so we pretty much have Yeah, no, we pretty much have a full creative agency in-house. So we have a senior director of creative operations. Our new designer actually doubles as our creative director. So she's amazing, which I think is really important. It wasn't how things were. When I first came to the brand, I felt like the designer was very disconnected from everything, marketing, visual, just how things landed, which I couldn't wrap my head around. You know, so we're very fortunate. She's pushing the brand in a great place. You know, we're launching new categories, you know, outside of just denim, which we were really excited about. And yeah, do everything, shoot everything in-house. They're shooting our spring 22, which is crazy to think about this week, but we just had our sales launch for wholesale. You know, they go to market in a few weeks for spring. So we're going to be shooting, you know, Tuesday through Friday, getting ready for spring. We just wrapped up our fall balance shoot last week. But yeah, we have 4 graphic designers, 2 copywriters, and then 3 other people in the creative department that get everything done.
Amazing. And then, like, is the reason you have that quantity of people because of the quantity of campaigns, or is it the quantity of products that you have? Like, really, are you a high SKU business? Or
high SKU business. But also just like how resource heavy our emails are. So we send out, you know, 1 email to our engaged list, which is anybody who's, you know, opened emails, purchased, or engaged with us in another way in the last 6 months. Now we're starting to do an additional email, like a PM send, at least 3 days a week, sometimes even 5 days a week. And just it being so resource heavy on the email creation side of things was why there seemed to be that necessity to bring it in-house.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah. And then having multiple copywriters and multiple designers, mm-hmm. like that's a lot of
sense.
We
do all the product copy very, very skew, high skew.
And then is it the same with like your customer acquisition channels? Like you're also doing all the copy and creative for those too. So like you also, you know, with the new collection and new sets of ads that are rolling out and optimizing and testing Facebook creative, like do you run those ads in-house as well? So like reporting to your director of marketing is in-house media buyers. Cool.
Yep. Yeah, so we just brought that in. That was one of the more recent changes made in February of this year.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then under the director of marketing, like what does that look like? Is that where like your email marketing manager is sitting?
Yep. The email marketing manager. Yep. Performance marketing manager that handles paid search and paid social, and then brand marketing manager that handles PR and influencer.
Got it. Nice. So you guys are even doing PR in-house?
So we have a really good agency that we work with. It was being done in-house, but we weren't really hitting the numbers that we thought we could do with having an agency. And then also, like, it was more so for wholesale, I would say. You know, wholesale needs a lot of, like, wholesale needs certain hits to, like, to happen right when they're going into market week, you know? It's kind of like, oh, I just heard about your guys' new technology. Oh, I just heard about this Christy Brinkley campaign that you guys just did or whatever. And they're just like, oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that was hitting this week. But it's like, it had been planned all along, you know?
right. I know. I think like, that's like the craziest thing to learn as you get in this space. And like, we were talking about this on social earlier. It's like, dang, it's like press is like, you know, you like buy the press, you have a good PR firm, and then it gets out there.
Yeah. And then, you know, as we've increased our influencer marketing program, you know, definitely wanted to have that being done in-house.
Right. Yeah, that's great. Well, yeah, I love the setup that you have. It's really pleasing to like my brain that likes to like organize and and compartmentalize everything. So like your setup, I think it's a great model for what's possible for a lot of brands. And it also like, is this something that you built overnight, or this is since like 2019, like you've been building out this team and org chart?
Yeah. Really have been just building out with a combination of like what we inherited, people that left, people that we had to, you know, part ways with. And then looking at people's strengths and understand, you know, we had, there was one other marketing manager left out, which was our e-com marketing manager, which is like a funny thing, but you know, she used to be our, like our buyer for DTC. So she was more on like a merchant role. But, you know, just as we have people on the wholesale side that are buyers for, you know, they manage Nordstrom and they manage Bloomingdale's and Saks and what have you. You know, she kind of managed that buy for NYDJ.com. because it was specific. It wasn't, you know, certain things didn't work. They work more for, you know, an in-store shop or whatever, and they have their exclusives. But we brought her over to, you know, as we moved some of that buying to planning. Again, the more things that have to deal with numbers and, you know, finances that we can put on planning, like, I'd love to, because they're amazing what they do. And they just see that full scope because of how strong the person sitting at the top is. But we wanted her to come and see, because so much of the email calendar and promo calendar was around the buys and historical performers. It made sense for her to just move to being a marketing manager and sitting under marketing, rather than just like this weird place she was before. So definitely evolved. You know, I feel like I kind of had an idea of how it all made sense, but very happy that it shook out that way.
Yeah. And I like how specialized everybody is too. You know, obviously, like, if you're growing really fast, like, it's okay to like not build this team overnight, but I think the layout and the org structure that you have makes a lot of sense. And it seems like the most organized, peace of mind kind of a marketing setup, especially with the EVP of planning and the planning team to like take care of all that. And then you just focus on the marketing, and then you have your specialized team members who are in every role inside marketing, e-commerce, and creative. And then like overseeing that. I mean, the amount of leverage that you get is probably incredible to really drive even better performance.
That's
unreal. That's an incredible setup. And we're starting to run out of time here, but like in terms of the rest of 2021, you've got this awesome team built out. You're now pretty much fully on your new tech stack, which is incredible. Like, how are you thinking about the future? Like, are you thinking like TikTok ads? Or are you more strategic than that? Or where's your head at as we finish out this year?
we cater to a slightly older consumer. They're not really on TikTok, but I'm more so excited to see, like, with our parent company and how we sit there, looking at things like TikTok and their ad platform, and seeing like, hey, are there particular products that might work better? Like, we just launched, as I told you, you know, we're expanding new categories. One of them was, a luxury line called Statement, which just has like a really cool aura to it. It's like some leather goods, more fashion pieces. I was like, oh, let's like do a little test buy on TikTok, you know, for Statement, and see how that works, because, you know, our normal NYDJ customer is not going to buy some of the Statement stuff. It's a little too edgy for her, but with the right creative, it might appeal to somebody on TikTok. So, you know, I would say with me, it's continuing to see, you know, what's new there in the tech space. You know, everybody is, the big gold rush right now, I think, is to SMS. We're very happy with our partners in Attentive, who I feel are, you know, really the best in the game. But, you know, always kind of seeing, you know, what's new, understanding how things, you know, between Facebook and Apple are going to affect, you know, what we're doing day in and day out, and, you know, just continue to try to bring relevant things to our customers.
Yeah, I love it. It sounds like you've got the dream team to accomplish all that as you uncover the new strategies. And yeah, that sounds like the right game plan. And that's awesome. And I really appreciate you coming on the show, Steve. This is really exciting. I don't get to have this conversation as much. Like, most of the brands we interview started on Shopify. You know, they didn't make the transition from Salesforce to Shopify, which is a really incredible transition. And, you know, I can't imagine all the hours and, you know, everything that went into that you had to go through to even do that. I think it's easy to say in a sentence like, yeah, we moved from Salesforce to Shopify Plus and now everything's great. It's like keyword now.
For sure.
But yeah, no, it's great to have another perspective. Love the way that you built out your team as well. I think that's that a lot of brands can learn from that. I think, you know, a lot of e-commerce and marketing leaders really need to slow down and get out of the weeds and build a team like you've built and, you know, be able to think more strategically like you have been about, you know, what is the right tech stack and what is that next gold rush and how do we think about that more strategically, especially as things continue to get more and more competitive online. And, you know, like you were talking about with Facebook and Google and Apple and everybody, like this kind of like war that's kind of like heating up behind the scenes. Like if you don't have the time to think about where things are going, you know, you're going to be in a bad spot whenever we get there. So no, I think you're in a great spot. I love the journey and I really appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day.